in any number of American cities, you might already be occasionally zipping down or zipping around town, I should say, on a shared bike, one that you pick up at a station and rent for a period of time and then return to another station. Bike sharing systems have been popular in the U.S. for about a decade now, but they're on the verge of a significant expansion, in part thanks to technology. For more, let's go to our weekly guide to the world of tech, Recode. Johanna Buya is Senior Transportation Editor at Recode. Hi there, Johanna.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great. So bike sharing programs have been around for a while now, but it seems as if companies are looking to grow with dockless programs. So how would that work?
Yeah, so dockless programs work a lot like the bike sharing system of today, except you don't actually have to find a station to park your bike back in, because the technology in the bike now, you can essentially unlock and lock the bike by scanning a QR code. So theoretically, you can leave this essentially anywhere, but obviously cities are a little bit concerned with bikes sort of stacking up and crowding parts of the public space.
Yeah. So, but tell me a little bit more. Unlock and lock the bike? Like, is there some sort of clamp around the wheel that is released? Okay.
Yeah. So it's the back wheel, and then when you scan the QR code using whichever company's app it is, the back wheel locks again.
Okay. And so what are companies in betting on here? I mean, why do they think they could be successful or even more successful, given that we already have, in a lot of cities, so many other currently well-functioning bike-sharing programs?
Definitely. Well, for one, the biggest complaint about the existing bike sharing system is that, you know, there really isn't a lot of access to it in places outside of major cities. And a part of that is because there is the costs and investment in the infrastructure, the stations themselves. In a lot of cities, the city itself is funding those stations. In New York, the company that's running City Bike, Motivate, actually pays for it itself. However, you still obviously have to come up with the money and then rent that parking space or part of that public space from the city. So with dockless biking, you don't need a physical station anywhere. So the idea is, and their pitch is, that they can expand fairly quickly. And so the parts of Brooklyn that City Bike may not serve today can be easily served by a dockless bike sharing company simply by placing a few bikes in that neighborhood.
I see. Now, are there other sort of tech infrastructure needs, though, that the system would have to have? Because obviously, you'd have to have enough broadband or internet connections to be sure to keep track of all the bikes and have all a critical mass of users, things like that.
Definitely. So all of the bikes are GPS enabled. Yeah. And so, you know, the company is able to keep track of it, which helps with things like making sure that there are enough bikes in places of higher demand, or even just spreading it out so that more people can have access to that bike. So the bikes have GPS capabilities. More and more of these bike companies are introducing electric bikes as well. And so we're going to continue to see that technology advance within the bikes.
Yeah. So it seems that you were saying earlier that you didn't want all the bikes. One wouldn't want them to all end up in certain areas. So I imagine every once in a while, maybe a company would have to go around and kind of redistribute where the bikes are. But you mentioned that there's a bit of a war going on between companies. I mean, how competitive is the market right now?
Yeah, so this is a fairly competitive market across the globe, but it's really early on in the U.S. And yet, you know, companies like Lime Bike, which launched earlier this year, is already in 14 markets. That paired with the competition against the existing player, which is Motivate and a few other players that operate City Bike in New York, Ford Go Bike in San Francisco, and so on and so forth. The dockless bike sharing companies are now competing against this existing player, which has exclusive contracts in a lot of cities. Add to that, there are two or three Chinese players, which they've seen incredible success across China. They've now launched in the U.S., and they have upwards of $900 million in funding. And so the space is definitely heating up a lot, and investors are starting to pour a lot of a significant sum of money into the space.
Okay. So on the one hand, having more people ride bikes seems really great, right? It's more energy efficient. You're not going around in a polluting car. Better for your health, better for the environment. Lots of good things about bike riding. But I don't know, I just look around in the streets right around our studio and I see lots of people riding without helmets and riding in places that really it's mostly for cars because the number of bikes on the road has been growing so much. So, I mean, are certain city governments perhaps wary about they don't necessarily have the infrastructure to support all these new temporary cyclists?
Definitely. And the main problem that the cities have is, as we talked about before, where people are going to put their bikes. Right now, the impetus is kind of on the user, the rider, to make sure that they put their bike in a responsible place so it's not in the way, it's not taking up a ton of space. So that's one concern. But the other concern, as you said, is do they have the infrastructure to see this increased usage of bike sharing companies? And these bike sharing companies, a big part of their pitch to cities is that because their bikes are GPS enabled and are connected, they're able to share with them anonymized trip data to show where they might need to invest in creating new bike lanes, for instance.
Yeah. Well, hopefully then the cities and states would have money to do that as well. But Johanna Buya, senior editor at Recode, thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me.